Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around,
our guest tonight grew up in Jacksonville, Florida, and earned a law degree from Florida State University. He served as legal counsel for Mother Teresa for 12 years. From 2002 to 2006, he served President George W. Bush as the director of the White House's Office of Faith-Based Community Initiatives. In 2011, he was named the second president and CEO of Ave Maria University in Naples, Florida. His name, James Toohey, and we're honored to have him as our guest. And I'm Jack Pasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Pasula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to Jim Toohey, the president, CEO of Ave Maria University. Jim, welcome. A real honor to have you.
Great to be on your show, Jack. Thanks for inviting me.
Can we start by talking about your childhood and your mom and your dad?
Well, I had parents who met through correspondence while he was a CB in the Solomon Islands during World War II, and then came back from war. They got married and in 6 years had five kids. And my twin sister and I were at the end of the line there. And so We grew up in Jacksonville, Florida, and attended Assumption Grade School and Bishop Kenny High School. And so we had, I pretty much was a Jacksonville, Florida product until going to Florida State.
What's the biggest thing, Jim, you learned from Mom, and what's the biggest thing you learned from Dad?
Well, my mom was extraordinary in her devotion to the Blessed Mother. She went to novenas every Monday night, and I usually went with her and would go and serve the novenas. I did that for years, and that was a great experience. And so I think her Marian devotion had a big impact on me. My parents separated and later divorced. So my father wasn't at the house, you know, all that much when I was growing up. But he was a very smart man and very hardworking, and really gave me a lot of the work ethic that you need in life as a man. And so, I have a debt to him on that. But he was Irish and, I think 100% Irish and then 100% French woman, so I guess that combo didn't work out too well.
When you were in your 20s, Jim, what were your dreams?
Well, I wanted to be a basketball coach. I was I loved basketball. I'd played it. I just didn't grow tall or strong, but I loved the game, and so I was manager of Florida State's basketball team, and then into my 20s, I went to law school, and I was a graduate assistant coach at Florida State. I love basketball. I was in the gym every day for 7 years at Florida State, and I thought I was going to be a basketball coach, but as I was finishing up law school, we were playing a game one night, Jack, against a team where it was tied. We had the ball out of bounds, 5 seconds left. We inbound it, missed the shot, and the guy gets the rebound, and from the corner at our end of the court, throws it 91 feet 3 inches into the basket to win the game. And I just stood there stunned and had this realization, is this what I want to spend my life doing, where your success or failure turns on a kid throwing the ball 90 feet into the basket to beat you? So that's when I got rid of thinking about being a basketball coach.
Let's go back to 1985, and you meet Mother Teresa one day in Calcutta. Can you tell us about that experience?
Well, I was working at that time for a U.S. Senator, Mark Hatfield of Oregon, who knew Mother Teresa. He and his wife, Antoinette, had gone to a part of India where Mother had a mission, and he knew her. And so because of that, I felt, well, gee, I'd love to meet her. And I was going overseas on a trip for Senator Hatfield on refugee issues. And I thought, well, heck, I can detour through Calcutta and meet her. And I thought you needed entree. You know, I later learned, of course, that Mother would meet anybody that had come all that way. You didn't need any kind of special permissions or entree. So August 20th, 1985, I walked into the Mother House and went to Mass. And when it was over, I went and met Mother, and she, you know, changed my life.
What did she say to you, Jim?
Well, she was happy to hear from Senator Hatfield. I brought her a letter from him, and then she was She was asking me about my book, was I married or not? And then I said no, and she said, well, listen to God, and he'll tell you what to do. And then she urged me to go over to her home for the dying, and which I did later that afternoon. And then she also said, go back to Washington and tell her sisters hello. I didn't even know she had nuns in Washington, so I told her I'd be happy to go do that. So it wasn't a long conversation or interaction with her. It probably was just a few minutes, I'm guessing around 5 minutes. But, yeah, it had later on all the seeds that she planted that day, really, those became very important to me.
Can you share with us when you walked into that house of the dying?
Well, I went there, you know, because Mother had suggested I go do it, and because I had the rest of the day free. I didn't even want to be in Calcutta. I didn't want to be around the poor. I certainly didn't want to serve the poor. I had just come in there to meet Mother and meet a woman that was, you know, living her faith. And, you know, I, as a Catholic, wasn't living my faith that much. I was very mediocre, and my fervor was really lax. And so I went to the home for the dying thinking, when Mother said to go there, that I'd get a tour. And so I asked for Sister Luke, just like she said. And then Sister Luke thought I had come to volunteer. And so she handed me cotton and this medicine. And she said, go clean that guy in bed 46 that has scabies. And I just walked in the door, so I couldn't tell her, well, I can't because I have to leave. I was just too proud to admit to her I didn't want to do it. And so I found myself walking back to that bed. And then, of course, I understand later that this was Jesus in his distressing disguise of the poor. That's how Mother Teresa used to describe it. And that he was waiting there for me in that bed. And so in touching that poor person and cleaning him, you know, the Lord touched me back. And so I was very happy to get out of Calcutta, Jack, the next day. But I then landed in Hawaii, and I was as uncomfortable there as I'd been in Calcutta. So it began a process of conversion, really.
And then for 12 years, you served as U.S. legal counsel for Mother Teresa and her nuns.
That's right. I was single, and I was now very smitten by the Missionaries of Charity and by Mother Teresa, and just, you know, really felt free. The Lord had started a change in my life, and they needed free legal help. And then Mother was coming to America frequently to open up AIDS homes, and she had permitting issues. She had immigration issues with her sisters. She had need of someone to protect her name from people that were trying to raise money off it. So I was in the right place at the right time, and Mother let me work closely with her and with her order, and that's been a, you know, relationship I've kept going to this day.
When we come back, we'll ask Jim Tuohy about his favorite Mother Teresa story. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Krasula, and we're with Jim Tuohy, who for 12 years was legal counsel for Mother Teresa in North America. And a quote once that she said, quote, I am a little pencil in the hand of a writing God who was sending a love letter to the world. Jim, what's your favorite Mother Teresa story?
Well, there are a lot of them. You know, I have a lot of memories of her. I certainly have a lot of fond memories of her when she met Mary and our kids the last time. So that's a great memory. You know, that might be, you know, that's certainly one that comes to mind this instant, Jack, because, you know, we were there, and when she came back to the United States 10 weeks before she died, and she received the Congressional Medal of Honor in Washington, and then she went up to New York. And so Mary and I and the kids just followed her around while she was on the East Coast. And so we were with her in Washington, and then we were with her in New York, and we were up in her, I was in the third floor of her convent there in the Bronx. Mary and the kids were downstairs playing, because at that point in time they were three kids under five. And I was going over the legal issues with Mother, and they were, you know, I was trying to stretch out the meeting because I knew I'd never see her again. At this point, she was in a wheelchair. She was 87 years old, and she was in very poor health. But she still had such this aura of loveliness, this aura of holiness. And so, but the meeting was going on, and we were going over some of the business matters of the Missionaries of Charity. And then one of the sisters came up behind the wheelchair and put her hands on the handles of the wheelchair to indicate to Mother that it was time for her to go rest, for her to go lay down. And so I said, Mother, before you go, Mary and the children are downstairs. Can they come up and get your blessing? They're out in the courtyard playing there. And before I could even finish that, Mother stood up from her wheelchair, and she looked out the window, and she said, where are the children? Where are the children? And I just thought, wow, that's the benefit of a life lived for others. That's the fruit of a life lived for others, that you have this childlikeness. She wanted to play with the kids. She wanted to see kids. You know, it was, she never lost that sense of wonder, that sense of joy, and she loved children, and she loved life, and I guess that's one of, you know, that's the last time I was with her, and it left a real lasting impression that she had this childlike heart, that she really had become little, like you said, like a simple pencil in the hand of God.
In 1996, at the urging of Mother Teresa, you, Jim Tuohy, founded Aging with Dignity, a non-for-profit organization that helps families plan for and discuss end-of-life care. Can you tell us about that organization?
Sure. I founded it because I was watching in Florida the storm clouds gathering about euthanasia. In fact, there had been a Florida Supreme Court case, and I realized that if we didn't start educating people about good end-of-life care and how they can maintain their God-given human dignity, there'd be more and more appeal toward euthanasia. And I worry about that because, it's, you know, if we think abortion's a disaster for culture, you know, euthanasia would be, you know, just a blanket across the country of darkness. And so to avoid that kind of standoff you see on the pro-life versus abortion side, try to educate people about how to maintain good care, teach them, you know, if you're Catholic, what the church teaches about when you can say no to medicine and when you should seek treatment. And so I had lived in a AIDS home that Mother Teresa had opened in Washington. In fact, that's where I met my wife. And so I had been with many people as they died, and I actually lived in it for a year and watched a lot of men that had AIDS and women go home to God, and how it wasn't, dying wasn't just a medical moment. And so I developed a document called Five Wishes. I created this with a lot of advice from, you know, hospice physicians, nurses, chaplains, family members that had had experiences. And so Aging with Dignity started. I actually even mentioned to Mother Teresa that I was going to start it, and she urged me to do it and sent me a letter urging me to do it. And so this was, you know, a year and a half before she died. So it's now, Five Wishes is in the hands of 18 million Americans, and it's really helping, I think, shape the debate that you can maintain your God-given human dignity when you're sick, but you need to assert your legal rights and a living will and the appointment of a surrogate who can make decisions for you and you can't make them yourself, and also to just have these conversations around the dinner table. Otherwise, you're going to have it around the, in the intensive care unit room, and it just doesn't go well. So that's how I started it, and thank God Paul Malley and his leadership, and you've got a lot of groups in the Midwest and in Michigan. I was just in Traverse City where Munson Healthcare is using that, and so a lot of good efforts to promote, you know, godly end of life care.
If you want to learn more, www.agingwithdignity.org. Jim, if there's a listener tonight that says, "Jim, I'm old, my body's breaking down, I'm useless, I just want to go," what do you say to that person?
Well, you certainly acknowledge the fact that there's a lot of pain in the lives of our elderly. Mother Teresa was asked one time what the worst disease was she had ever seen. Was it leprosy? Was it AIDS? And she said, no, it was loneliness. And we see that terrible cancer of loneliness, particularly in even wealthy countries like ours, where people feel unloved, unwanted, all alone. You see this particularly in nursing homes and assisted living. So when a woman would say that to me, Jack, or a man that just says they are hurting and want to go home to God, it's often a cry for relationship. It's a cry for contact. They need to love and to be loved. And so you'd certainly want to see ways that the church can reach out to people who are just dying from this cancer of loneliness. And thank God we have many, you know, churches, parishes, and synagogues, and others that go out and reach out to the lonely and the shut-ins, and we all need to do more of that, because the age wave is hitting America, which is why euthanasia is such a danger. It's always easier to kill someone than to care for them and to spend time with them. And so we have to develop a culture that's going to be like the Blessed Mother at the foot of the cross and be there to show compassion and love and just a witness of faith. And so you're right, though, Jack. There are a lot of people that are hurting out there that are very lonely, and they have aches and pains, and the church tries to connect that to the cross. And that's what I saw Mother Teresa do, that her pain was an offering.
In 2002, Jim Tuohy, you become the director of the White House's Office of Faith-Based Community Initiatives, serving President George W. Bush. Tell us about the main objectives of that job.
Well, President Bush really knew that America had these armies of compassion that were out there, but often government would come in with a disordered understanding of the First Amendment and would discourage faith-based groups from being in the public square. So President Bush wanted to level the playing field, remove the barriers, let faith-based groups be there. Because when you deal with the poor, let's take a drug addict, for example. You know, you can throw them in treatment program after treatment program. If they don't want to get better, if they don't want to choose life, you often labor in vain. And faith-based groups have a way to connect to their soul, to make them choose life, to make them want to love themselves again and to treat their bodies with respect and care because they're made in God's image. And so a lot of faith-based programs have been very successful, but boy, you got thrown out of the public square if you had a cross on the wall or a mezuzah at your door, or if you had a board of directors that were all of one faith, or a mission statement that was openly Christian. All of a sudden government was coming and saying, whoa, whoa. That was the attitude, the secular attitude. It was a secular orthodoxy that was just as intolerant as you can imagine. And so President Bush came, removed those barriers, worked with Democrats, Republicans alike. And I think when I left office, there were 35 governors that had faith-based offices, and most of them were Democrats. So it was an initiative that was often badly misunderstood, but I admired President Bush for his belief in what he called America's healers, those armies of compassion. And he left really a beautiful legacy of groups who before had been banished from the square, welcome back. Now, unfortunately, under President Obama, the office hasn't fared as well, so obviously that's going to be an election issue.
What's the biggest thing, Jim Tuohy, you learned from President George W. Bush?
You know, I loved that he was comfortable in his own skin. You know, he wasn't out there where in front of the crowds he was one way and then behind the scenes he was another. He really was true to himself. He had a, you know, I have to say, Jack, I love President Bush and Mrs. Bush. It was an honor to work for them. You know, as staff members, we sometimes let them down. We gave them bad information or bad advice, and a president's going to live or die based on the advice from people like us. But I think when you read Decision Points, his autobiography, you see that he tried to make the right decisions, and what you saw was what you got. He wasn't using teleprompters and wasn't trying to look better than he was. And I can remember one time coming into the West Wing. We'd have meetings every morning at 7:30 for senior staff, and the president was going to give a faith-based speech that morning. And I went over by the Oval Office to see if he needed anything, and there he was sitting at the Resolute desk there in the Oval Office reading his daily devotional. And so he was starting his day with prayer, and I just, you know, he wasn't out there trying to do some showy religion. He had suffered with alcohol, and he talked about that and how he had straightened out his life. But I feel like George Bush was a man of great integrity, and he was true to himself, and it showed, I think.
We're talking to Jim Tuohy, and I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Krasula, and we're with Jim Tuohy, who in February of 2011 was named the second president and CEO of Ave Maria University in Naples, Florida. Jim, why did you decide to accept that position?
Well, that's a pretty long story, Jack, in that Mary and I had just moved to Potomac, Maryland. We had bought a house. We had reestablished our 5 kids in schools. But it's hard to say no to Tom Monahan. You look at a guy like Tom Monahan, who's put his faith into action, put his wallet where his faith was, and put hundreds of millions of dollars into a school on the grounds that used to be tomato fields. So when he approached me, you know, he said, look, we've got the campus up, we've got a good number of students going, but we could use help as we try to get this university to maintain its excellence, but also to, you know, have its finances aligned so that the revenues and expenses are matched. So Michael Timmis, the chairman of the board, Michael Novak, a gentleman I knew who's also a trustee of Ave Maria, they flew up to Washington. We had lunch. And I talked to Tom, but I just said, Tom, I can't do this. We just moved. We just resettled. I can't ask this of Mary. And then suggested I come down and speak in January. Well, I thought, well, I should do that at least. You know, I want to help Tom in some way. But when I came down to the campus, Jack, I was not prepared for how great these kids were. And I wasn't prepared for the caliber of the faculty. I thought it was a little Catholic bubble out in the Everglades, you know. And to go there and see these great kids that were attending school here, and then to meet faculty members from Harvard, Yale, Princeton, Columbia, Cornell, you name all the prestigious institutions, they held degrees from them. And I thought, whoa, nobody knows this. And so I talked to my wife over the phone and said, Mary, maybe the Lord's leading us here, but I'm not going to come at your expense. So I flew back and watched the family, and she came down unannounced and just kind of under the radar, and a day later called back and said, I think the Lord says, yes, we should be coming down here. So off we went. So it was a fairly quick discernment at that point because Tom wanted me to get to work right away. So all of a sudden it went from a dinner at Mr. Jack Donahue's house, who's just this extraordinary man of faith, 13 kids and 86 grandkids, and he hosted a dinner that Chuck Colson attended, and Tom was there, Nick Healy, the president, Michael Timmis, the chairman of the Board of Trustees. And so within a short time, I had accepted the offer, and here I am, loving it.
Jim, some would say this Ave Maria University, the model is flawed. It's in the middle of nowhere, as you say, the Everglades, and also it's too Catholic.
Well, I think on the location issue, we are a little off the beaten path, although I can get in my car right now, Jack, and in 35 minutes I can be splashing in the Gulf of Mexico, which isn't bad. People in South Bend would want to be able to do that in the winter. But it is out there a little bit, and I'm sure, you know, over time the Lord's will on why it was situated here will be clear. Florida is a growth state, and my guess is in 20 years this will not be out in the middle of nowhere. And we have a good student life, so the kids get into Naples plenty, so I feel like the location issue is more just a challenge for us to make sure student life's interesting, and we're making great strides there. On the two Catholic front, you certainly want to be authentically Catholic and adhere to the magisterium. We love the Holy Father here. We love the Catholic intellectual tradition. We're proud to offer our students Aquinas and Augustine and the great thinkers, doctors of the church. We also want to make sure the education our students get prepare them for the world so that they're not in a Catholic bubble, that they can go out there and be around people that don't look like them, vote like them, pray like them, and that they can function. And so, because we want them to not flee the culture, we want them to graduate and go change it, you know, go engage it and be part of the new evangelization. And so I think maybe when the school first started out, it was kind of branded as kind of a turn back to the old school model. But you can expect with any brand new university that there would be fits and starts as you get going. I admire how Tom got it to this point this quickly. But I think now the university is kind of seen as a place that's normal and devout and that welcomes people of different faiths or none at all, because the search for truth and the search for Jesus Christ, who is the fullness of the truth, is what every Catholic university should be about. But, of course, we're here to educate, not to indoctrinate. This isn't a catechism class. This is a place where they're going to become skilled in their particular concentration of studies, whether it's business or whether it's theology or biology. And so, I think people are waking up to Ave Maria, and they're also finding out, oh, my gosh, Tom has priced this so low, it's within the reach of a lot of families.
What's your major objectives as president and CEO of Ave Maria University, Jim Timmis?
Maintain the Catholic identity, continue to maintain the academic excellence. We've got an outstanding faculty. I need to make sure that they have the tools they need to succeed as scholars and as professors. We certainly have to get the finances aligned with revenues so that we're not operating at a deficit. Everybody knew the university would operate at a deficit when you start. The challenge now is to grow the enrollment and to raise funds and to get us to the break-even point, which we think we'll be at in 2014-15. Thankfully, Jack, so many Americans have responded generously because we only have 690 alums. So if people don't adopt us and say, hey, I want to support that school, we're not going to make it. So, but they've got an exemplar in Tom Monahan who, you know, not only adopted the school but has put his formidable wealth in the service of it. And it's just one of the most incredible stories of philanthropy. But I've also seen people send in their $20 and that are living on fixed incomes, but they want to see something truly authentic like Ave Maria flourish. And so those are the challenges. We're going to grow the enrollment and try to make the school really a presence in Catholic higher education.
I've been there a number of times. Share with us, from your point of view and your eyes, that little downtown area in the middle of campus.
It is. It's a neat place, you know. You've got the big oratory there that Tom built. It's just majestic. It has the Frank Lloyd Wright influences. It seats about 1,100 people. When he was building a church like this, it would almost remind you of Bernadette and Lourdes digging into the ground there, and people thought she was crazy. And the next thing you know, there are these springs of water that are, you know, renowned for healing properties of the Lord has used it for. To build this church out here was just, it had to have the same type of effect on people. What in the world are you doing building an 1,100-seat church? And then surrounding it are these little shops and condos. So you've got on the main floor everything from a hair salon to a pizzeria to the pub to a place for smoothies, tropical smoothie. And then you've got some businesses. Ave Maria Mutual Funds is out here now, which is great. Legatus has their office out here. And then about 100 condominiums that line this square. It's really quaint, you know. My family, we always eat there at least once a weekend because we enjoy it. It's a nice place to go and relax, and there's next to no crime. So really, Ave Maria has had a tremendous run, I think. And it's now, obviously, it was affected by the housing bubble pop, but it's getting back up on its feet, and they're building houses again.
We're talking to Jim Tuohy. When we come back, we'll ask him how he's going to make this thing profitable where the tuition is much lower than normal. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Jack Krasula, this is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to Jim Tuohy, who for 2 years, or 4 years, served President George W. Bush as the director of the White House's Office of Faith-Based Community Initiatives, and is now president and CEO of Ave Maria University. Jim, you're charging $21,000 per student, and I believe the average student's only paying $10,000. How are you ever going to make that thing profitable?
Well, one way you know, this was a big part of Tom's mission, was to keep the cost of a quality Catholic education affordable. And so we do provide a lot of scholarship money for good students, and the average student is paying about half the sticker price, as you said, $21,000 for tuition and fees. And so obviously when you look at some of the big schools, I was just seeing how Providence is over $60,000 now, Providence College, for tuition, fees, room, and board. So for us to keep our tuition and fees where the average is paying about $10,000, you got to keep your overhead down. And so we streamlined operations. We went from 195 full-time staff to 144 just in since May of 2010. But we did this without decreasing our faculty size at all, so we didn't have any cuts among the faculty. So you got to preserve the quality of the education. So how do you get to profitability so that you're in the black ink and out of the red ink? Well, you certainly have to grow the enrollment. We have about 400 empty beds in our dormitories that are state-of-the-art dormitories, so we've got to fill those up. Tom was smart to build so many of them, but we've got to hurry up and fill them up because there's a debt service with that. And then continue to raise money so that helps underwrite the education by getting scholarship money from Catholics in the country that care about good quality education. And I think with those two things, and you retain your students so that they stay here when they enroll, they don't leave. We've had retention issues in the past, and this past year was our best year on retention. So I think we're turning the corner there. So if you do those things well, you know, a lot of universities, Jack, that charge these huge amounts of money have these enormous bureaucracies and all these different major studies, and they have, you know, just the way they spend money is... It's no wonder people are grumbling about the cost of education, but Ave Maria is positioned perfectly because we aren't overpriced. We're probably half the price of some of the middle-tier Catholic universities, and we're a third of the price of schools like Notre Dame or Boston College, Georgetown, those places. So we really are, I think, positioned well, and that was just important to Tom. And we're going to try to keep the tuition. We're going to raise it, you know, slowly. The net tuition, but we do feel like we can do that and still be a bargain.
I quote you, you say, quote, "We want to create real men and women," unquote. That sounds great, Jim Tuohy. What does that mean?
Well, it means that you've got people living life to the full, that they recognize that the Creator has endowed them with certain faculties and gifts, and so we want them to become critical thinkers. We want to see in them kind of the union of reason and faith, that those are complementary, that they need each other. So to have competent writers, critical thinkers, creative people, that's what humanity is. It's not a measure of how much wealth they're going to amass or how much prestige they might get out in a celebrity-fixated world. You know, we want them to be real men and women, and some might go into the priesthood or the religious life. Most of them will go into the married life, and we want them to see the richness of that vocation, the honor, the dignity of being a mom or a dad, and the beautiful life as a shepherd of the little souls that God entrusts to you. So we do feel like so often higher education is about training them technically so that they have some professional skill that they can make a living on. Well, we want them to make a living, but we want to do something deeper in them. We want them to really get the liberal arts education that equips them to derive beauty from life and to see the wonder of creation and to see the work of God in their midst and to be able to recognize the theological virtues and their power in their lives and to use their reason and employ it in a world that sometimes seems, you know, off its rocker. So we just feel like that's what real men and women will do. That's what the church wants to raise up. That's what the new evangelization is about. And when you think of John Paul II or Pope Benedict XVI, and you read what they have to say, they love these, you know, youth gatherings that they hold periodically because they want to challenge the youth to become authentic Catholics and really live authentic lives and not buy into the poor version of what life is about that the culture sometimes promotes.
You've been a president of a university for 6 years, from 2006 to 2010, St. Vincent College in Latrobe, Pennsylvania, Arnie Palmer's hometown, and
that's
now
right.
Ave Maria. What have you learned, Jim Tuohy, from the college students these last 6 years?
That they're hungry for something authentic, that they want to be connected to things of permanence, that they're interested in the transcendent. They're not impressed with the whole MTV era. The whole hookup culture, of so many colleges where there's just this casual sex and the binge drinking, all those people, they find that doesn't satisfy. We've had kids that have transferred to Ave Maria that went to other schools, and they talk about the cultures what they had at their previous school. It doesn't satisfy. It's like a thirsty person drinking salt water. So they're looking for the transcendent, the authentic. They want to be challenged. They want the fullness of life. They want an adventure. They want a cause to fight for. They want to have a truly human life. And so often colleges just play to the lowest common denominators of our culture. And as a result, they churn out individuals who may have degrees in their hand but never really matured, never grew up, didn't have self-discipline. A good school is going to have a demanding curriculum that will require you to develop that kind of discipline and also the tools you need to make it in the world. And so I'm impressed by the hunger they have for God, the hunger to learn for the truth. They want to be educated and challenged. They want to challenge you. This is the beauty of a university. That's what should be going on.
God has blessed you, Jim Tuohy, to be around Mother Teresa, George W. Bush, and now Tom Monahan. What's the biggest thing you've learned from Tom Monahan?
Well, I love how he's fearless. You know, he is a Marine, of course, and he's a highly disciplined man, but he had a vision, and he stuck to it, and here I am looking out my window now at this marvelous, beautiful campus he built against all odds and probably at the worst time he possibly could have done it. Tom's fearless, and I admire that, and he also leads by example. You know, this guy is one of the hardest working people you'll ever meet. When you read Pizza Tiger, his autobiography, you realize, boy, that guy, he didn't just, you know, win the lottery. He went out there pizza by pizza and succeeded by learning everything there was about that business and then taking calculated risks, which he succeeded in assessing. So, I think of the word fearless when I think of Tom. I see a man that's no coward. He goes out there and tackles big challenges and has trust that God will be with him. His faith is beautiful to watch.
Jim Tuohy, as our time together winds down this evening, last question, what advice would you give to our young listeners?
I would give them the advice that John Paul II gave when he was first announced to the church, when he said, be not afraid. The willingness to follow where God leads you, to listen to God, and he'll tell you what to do. Those were the words Mother Teresa told me that I would share with them. We have a culture that bombards you with sounds and images and messages, and there's e-texts and Twitter and all these, you know, distractions. We've lost that faculty to listen to God in the silence of our hearts. And so we try to provide an environment here where that can happen, but I would urge them to listen to God, to be not afraid, and as Mother Teresa used to say, to love until it hurts. And if they do those things, they'll live fulfilled lives, and they'll be like Mother at the end of life with a childlike heart and a real joy in their lives.
Jim Tuohy, what a role model. What a Christ-centered man.
Well, pray for me, Jack, and pray for this great work at Ave Maria University.
We will. Please join us next Sunday. Until then, I'm Jack Rasula. Thanks for listening. And make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spahom.